Now, in the name of full disclosure tonight, I preached this message here over 9 years ago, almost a decade ago, when I candidated for this church. It was shortly after Pillsbury had closed. Only 8 months prior to that, I had taken the position, as many of you know, I'm going over this because we have some new people with us, I'd taken a new position at Pillsbury Baptist Bible College in Minnesota as a Bible instructor. I never dreamed the opportunity to come away. I hadn't candidated for it. I hadn't sent out applications or anything. They were told about me. I was in Northern Indiana pastoring a country church there, and they got a hold of me and wanted to know if I'd be interested in coming and teaching at Pillsbury, and I didn't even know what Pillsbury was. And I thought about it and kind of wrestled with it, and then they called back and said that position had closed up. The guy decided not to leave. Okay, a few months later, or weeks later, they call me back in and say, are you still interested in teaching at Pillsbury? And I says, well, yeah, more so now than I was before, because I kind of looked into it, got curious, and they had a different position that opened up, and they wanted me to come and fill that one. And so the Lord opened up the door. It seemed like a blessed opportunity. I was all excited about it. I dragged my family all the way out there to Minnesota. My kids transferred in there. They could go there for free since I was a teacher in their school. And it looked like, wow, this is like perfect. I know I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life. I'm going to be teaching here in this Bible college. 2 months later, I find out it's closing. And I remember thinking, what's going on here? You know, I thought I had it all figured out. I thought I knew what God wanted to do, and the door just closed, and not only for me, but for 200 other people. And pretty soon our salaries were stopping, and school was closing. We didn't have a house. We had nowhere to go. And you start looking at the Lord and saying, Lord, what are you up to? That was my experience. You could probably share your story of a thing you went through in your life when all of a sudden you thought you had it figured out, you thought you knew what God wanted you to do, and everything went amiss. An opportunity closed, a deal didn't go through, the house you thought you were going to buy didn't happen, you lost your job, your health went bad. A lot of different things happen like that. Even Christians plan and have their lives thoroughly figured out, and it's totally disrupted. And we leave God out of our plan sometimes as though he's a mere spectator watching us live our lives, and we just turn to him at times to help us out and work out our plans and help things come together. And we lose sight of the fact that God is actually the one guiding our lives and determining where we're going to go, what we're going to do, how we're going to live. And we're living in many ways just like the non-believers live, if we're not careful. Planning our lives, doing our thing, following our agendas, and we're leaving God out of the picture. And that's why this text, after my experience there at Pillsbury, meant a whole lot to me. And most of my books were all boxed up from when I moved out of Indiana to Pillsbury, and then they didn't even get fully unpacked because we packed them back up and put them in storage. And then I had an opportunity to come here and preach, and I'm like, I don't even have all my tools. So I've had a little bit more time to work on this some more, so it's not exactly the same message, but it is the same theme and the same truth that we need to be reminded of, I think, over and over again. We need to look to God daily for guidance. And this phrase that he starts off this passage with is very important. Verse 13, it says, go to now, you that say. In other words, in a way you could translate, now listen, pay attention. I've got something important to tell you. It's only a place in the Bible where this actual phrase is used. It means listen up. James is saying, come, pay attention, for this is extremely important for you to grasp. And so he's not just talking to, I think, non-believers. Some wrestle with whether it's non-believers. I think it's something that fits all of us. We got to pay attention to this truth. So let's look at it. And first of all, we're going to look at the folly of future plans. Go to now, you that say, today or tomorrow we will go into such a city, continue there a year, and buy and sell and get gain. We've got all figured out. And he seems to be addressing the merchants. They're often Jewish merchants who traveled all over the ancient world, buying, selling, working in major trade centers of that day to make money. And so he sounds like he's getting ready to go on a trip. He's going to go to a certain place. He's going to make money there, do his business, and come back with a sizable profit, he figures. It could easily take a year or more to set up such a business plan and to go through with it. So he's pretty well figured out for the whole next year what he's going to be doing. Now, their sin is not that they are engaged in business. This is not an anti-business message. It was that they were counting, presuming upon the future, without any recognition of the God who controls the future. And that's what so often happens. We plan ahead, we figure out what we're going to do. We know what we like to do, and we leave God out of the picture. Notice the detailed plan. He knows when he's going to go. It's precisely scheduled. We will be there for a year. There's a certainty we will do this. This is what's going to happen. He knows how long, the duration of the intended operation. He's going to be there for a year and conduct business, what he's going to do, the nature of his activity, the business he's going to set up, and why he anticipates a certain income. He's going to make a profit. He's got it all figured out. You know, that's where I'm going to go. That's how I'm going to carry on my business, what I'm going to do, and this is why I'm doing it. He's got it all down. Have you ever met anybody like that? Have you ever been like that? Okay. I was. I was sure what I was going to do. I had it all figured out. I knew how I was going to get my kids through college, where we're going to live, what I was going to pursue. And it can change in a moment. And what he brings out in a statement, there's an arrogance in that, if we're not careful. Because we're ignoring the providence of God, that he's the one who's actually in control. I mean, in our day and age, we'd say this person is very commendable. He's read all the management books, right? This is how to succeed in business. You have to have your 5, 10, 15, 20-year goals and plans laid out what you're going to do. You have to know what you're going to do. You have to know why you're doing it so you're motivated to stay on course. You have to have your time marks, when you're going to do this, when you're going to do that. You have to have it all figured out. Not that that's wrong. The problem is we can plan all we want. We don't have any control over it. There's only one who's in control. And God was nowhere in their plans. I remember one professor I had in Bible college. I alluded to one earlier this morning. I had another one. Every day he would end the class, say, Lord willing, we'll see you next week. Or next class period, Lord willing. He was right on target. Because we don't know. We do not know what's going to happen. God is nowhere figured in these plans. He knows why he's absent. Turn to Luke 12. Luke chapter 12, verse 16. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? And he said, this will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall thy things be? or who shall these things be which thou hast provided? So it is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. You store up, you plan for the future, you think this is what I'm going to do, and they can all vanish. See, the reason Pillsbury closed, one of the key reasons, was in 2008 they had a huge downturn in the market. There was a huge investor who helped support the school, a number of missionaries and things like that, and all of a sudden that avenue of resources was totally gone. The guy lost his money in the market, and that was one of the factors that contributed to it. I remember at the same time I was talking about the fact that, you know, we didn't have any money. We didn't know how we were going to get by, and we're trusting. And others were talking about how they had their money stored up in their retirement, and they were planning to do a lot of things, and their whole retirement was gone. It was just vanished overnight. They lost practically everything. And you were hearing stories like that all over the place. He says, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We have no idea. Planning is great, but planning without prayer is presumption. And counting on the future, my friends, is folly. We don't know what the future holds for any of us here. Everything could change overnight. These people shut God out of their commercial lives. And they may profess their faith. I don't think these were unbelievers or probably Jewish merchants. They were probably people who had a faith in God. Perhaps they were even Christian businessmen. But sometimes we profess faith and we talk like believers, but we actually live as practical atheists. We do our business, we carry on our jobs, and we don't bring God into that and say, Lord, what is it you want me to do on this job? How do you want me to carry on this business? How can I glorify you in my work? And if the Lord closes up that job, he's going to open up another one. If the Lord closes this door, he opens another. God will keep guiding you in the course of your lives. That's what I learned. I thought my whole, I was totally dumbfounded what the Lord had done. Send me up to Minnesota. Okay, Ian's back there, yeah. Okay. You know, why there? And then to close the door on me after I finally got there, to me, was cruel. I remember feeling that way. It's like, this is just cruel. God had to know this. I didn't ask to come here. He had these guys call me up and put this in my ear and draw me out here. And yet afterwards, I realized it opened up all kinds of opportunities for me. Finally, I was having opportunities to go to a number of different churches. And I picked the best one, you know, okay, and wound up here. And it's like I never would have done that if the Lord hadn't moved me in this way. The other thing he brings out in the next verse is not only the uncertainty of the future, the folly of the future, we just don't know what the future holds, is the frailty of life. 4:14. Whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little while and then vanisheth away. They mistakenly thought they were going to be around forever. Right? At least for the next year. He had already figured out what he was going to do. It's just like the guy who had the barns he built and was going to store it all away for the future, for retirement, when he'd be able to do all the things he wanted to do. My friends, we don't know if we have tomorrow. Life can be very short. How can they plan their selling campaign for the year when they can't even guarantee that they'll see tomorrow? We don't even know what will happen tonight, much less next week, next year. I don't know. Our lives are like a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes away, like the fog. It's there for a couple hours, vanishes, and you see no signs of it. It's just gone. August 15th, 2016, woke me to the full weight of this reality. you know. Heart attack. Wound up in the hospital. Never thought that happened to me. I thought it was a tough German stock, you know. No way I'm ever going to have something like this happen. That's to all the other fat people, not me. But no, hit me. So I have that, put in some stents, thought, okay. Go home 4 days later, have another one. Stents collapse, back in the hospital. Lord, what are you trying to teach me this time? You know, you wonder. You go home, a couple days later, back in the heart attack, back in the hospital. I was really getting nervous. I watch a lot of baseball games. Three strikes, you're out. I was really wondering what in the world's going on here. You realize life can go like that. I've lived every day since then with the reality, because I still didn't feel good then, and wound up having, 8 months later, you know, the double bypass. And it starts driving home this point that we don't know whether we even have tomorrow. We can go at any moment. Life is fragile. Any moment the Lord can call us home. We are such frail creatures. It may not be a heart attack. You can be in a car accident. You could, anything could happen, right? And so he tells us, don't think you know. 1 Samuel 23, David said, yeah, as surely as the Lord lives and as you live. Now listen, as surely as you live, there is only a step between me and death. Yeah, we're very much alive. But we're constantly under the threat of death. Constantly. And so we have to live with that understanding. And of all people, we as believers should embrace that truth. Because I had one guy share this with me, and it's always stuck with me. Maybe not as much as it should. But he says, you realize when we did our baptisms, we're acknowledging the fact that we deserve to die, that we are under the wrath of God, and that God has every right to wipe us out. But because Christ died in his place, he is giving us life. And every day that we live after that, we recognize, is a day I didn't deserve. It's a day I don't deserve. Every moment is a gift from God. And therefore, I should be living it for him. And so to leave God out of my plans and to presume upon the future is a very foolish thing. Because every day that I live, I have no right to. It's a gift from God. And I need to live it for him as though perhaps it could be my last day. Because it could be. God needs to constantly be in our thoughts. And that brings us to the sovereignty of God. Verse 15. For that you ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. But now you rejoice in your boasting. All such rejoicing, what's shocking, all such rejoicing is evil. And I know that feeling. You get all excited. You're playing about the future. You think you know what's going to happen. And you get all excited about it, don't you? And it's almost as though we're boasting about it before we've even done it. I mean, he's already boasting about all the barns he's going to build, all the money he's going to make, and the guy's going to die that night. In the parable, in this passage, the man's presuming upon the future and all the money he's going to make, but he hasn't even started the trip yet. You know how many things can happen in the course of that year? You know how many things can happen before he even gets on the ship? What can happen on the ship? What can happen after he heads back? Life is full of uncertainties. Full of them. No amount of money, influence, power, or planning can guarantee tomorrow. Only God grants us another sunrise, another breath, another opportunity. So there should be an element of contingency in all our plans. If you will, Lord, if this is what you want, so be it. Isn't that what Jesus taught us in the prayer in Gethsemane? Lord, this is what I want. I don't want to have to go through the cross. I don't want to have to go through what I have to face, but not my will, your will be done. What is it you want, Lord? Proverbs 27:1. Boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. I have no idea. People sometimes ask me, do you think the Lord's coming back? Yes. I can give that much. When? I don't know. I don't need to know. Well, you think he's going to come during your lifetime? I'm not even sure I have another lifetime. I don't know. I'm on borrowed time already. You know? I don't know. I only know who holds the future. I only know who's in absolute control. I only know that he's on the throne. That's all I know. He doesn't let me in on his plans. He keeps me guessing. It's a matter of keeping God on the throne in our planning. That's what he's really talking about here. It's a matter of keeping God in his rightful place. He's the king. He's the Lord. He's the one that's in control. Turn to 2 Chronicles 16, verse 12. And Asa, in the 39th year of his reign, was diseased in his feet, until his disease was exceedingly great. Yet in his disease he sought not to the Lord, but to the physicians. And Asa slept with his fathers and died in the 40th year of his reign. He went to everyone else. The physicians suffered many things from them, but they could not do anything for the problems he had in his feet. And because of that, he died. And the implication of the text is that if he'd only gone to the Lord, he perhaps would have lived. But he went to everyone else but the Lord. And sometimes we do that in our plans. We get all nervous about what to do. We go talk to our friends. We try to get advice from those people that we think can help us. We try to sort through what to do by going to everyone else but the Lord. We'll read all the books on finance and business and think we need to know what we need to do to have success, and not realizing that every good gift is from above. It's only the Lord that can make things succeed. No matter how much we plan, it's really up to him. And so he says it's a sin to plan without God. Arrogant in the sense of self-sufficiency is what he's alluding to here. We become proud in our plans as though we're the ones in control, that we get to decide what's going to happen. And they proclaim their autonomy from the Lord. Listen to what he's saying. You know what I'm going to do? I am going to move over there, going to live there for a year, conduct business, come make a profit, and come back. That's what I'm doing. You hear the arrogance in that? Proclaiming their autonomy. See, the Lord wanted the Israelites, who were his people, to understand how absolutely dependent they were upon him. And so he sent them into the wilderness. And at first they were just going to march to the promised land, conquer the land, take possession, enjoy the vineyards, enjoy all the prosperity of the land. Everything was going to go great for them. They knew what their future had in hand. And yet when they found out there were obstacles, all of a sudden they went the other way and says, well, we can't overcome those. There's giants and walled cities. We can't do that. And so we can go up and take the possession of the promised land. And the Lord said, because of your disbelief, you're going to perish here in the wilderness. But catch this. There's a whole generation of little children growing up in the wilderness. And as they're growing up, the Lord provided for them every day with manna. And the sixth day he provided a double portion for them. But there was no manna on the seventh day. And for 38 years from that time on, every day they saw God provide them manna. When they were thirsty and they couldn't find water supply, he gave them water from a rock. One day, mom and dad got so tired of the manna, they started complaining, cry out to God. And God sent a bunch of quail to them. God can take care of our needs. God can provide for us. We need to trust God every day for our daily need because God will take care of us. Yes, I plan for the future. Yes, I try to move forward. I try to think of what God wants me to do, but I understand that he can change it and often does. But I can't presume upon the future. I need to live each day faithfully for him, trust him to meet my needs, and he always does. We went, it was 4 or 6 months. Went quite a time with no pay. And we had more money in the bank after that time than we did before we started. God took care of us. God met our need all the time. And that's not the first time. I look back over our ministry, there's time and time again where God's taken care of us. God's opened doors when one closed. He always, always does that. We're not, the point of this passage, though, and this is what I've learned. You remember I mentioned this morning I study passages over and I always learn something new? That was the old lesson. With a fresh reminder about the thing about living, you know, every day. But here's the one that struck me as I went through this last time. The point in this passage is not merely passive acceptance of God's sovereignty. The point is really something else. If God wills it, we will live. If God approves it, we will do this or that. It's surrender to his lordship over our daily lives. It's the key to understanding the next point that he makes, because verse 17 almost doesn't seem to fit with what's gone before. So I'm going to read through this all the way down to verse 17, and I think you'll see what I'm getting at. Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow we will go into such a city, and continue there a year, and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time, and then vanisheth away. For that you ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live, and do this or that. But now you rejoice in your boasting. All such rejoicing is evil. Therefore, so this past verse is totally based on everything that's gone before. Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. And the question is, how does that fit with what's gone before? Obviously, he's talking about the sins of omission. The sin of omission is failure to do what one knows one ought to do. So you can sin by doing nothing. Right? Some of us take refuge in the fact that we haven't done anything really bad. We've not done some wicked deed, some horrible sin. And most sins we think in terms of acts of greed or immorality or deceit or something like that. But our greatest sins may be what we don't do. So here's the key. When I plan out my future, and I figure I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that, or this are my plans, and I've got it all worked out, and I'm following my agenda, I don't have room for God's agenda. And you know how you can tell? You've got your day all planned out, you've got it figured out, you've got your list, you've got your schedule worked out, you're busy as a beaver, and all of a sudden, someone comes your way and wants to talk to you. I've got important things to do. I've got projects I've got to get finished. They're not on your agenda. And so you don't deal with them. You don't talk to them. Or you talk to them briefly. Your focus is trying to get back to what you know you need to do. And it may be perfectly good things. But you've failed to do what God wanted you to do right then and there with your time. That's a sin of omission. You figured out your budget. You know exactly how you need to spend your money to save up and get that thing that you want. And all of a sudden you run across somebody or someone's brought to your attention has a special need and they're really hurting. And they need help. And you have the funds to help them. But that's not on your agenda. That's not on your plans. And so you can't let go of it because you need this to accomplish your goal. And so you don't help out. The sin of omission. You have an opportunity to witness to somebody, but the problem is you're in a hurry and you have to get somewhere. And if you sit and talk to them, you're going to be late. Or maybe you finally got the tickets to that Packer game that you've always wanted to go to. And somebody is broken, stops by your house, and they need to talk with you, and they need help. And you've got to give that up to talk with them. We've had that happen quite a bit in the ministry, where we have our plans scheduled. We know what we want to do. And somebody dies. They never do it at the right time. No one ever checks with me, you know? Now all of a sudden we have to drop what we're doing. I need to go there and help them. And I'm being a little humorous at this point. Of course, I want to be there. I want to help them. I want to do what I'm called to do as a pastor. But sometimes it's a sacrifice. You know, I can't be with them. I have to let Nancy and the kids go or do something else, you know, or we just drop the plans altogether. I remember one time we were in Texas and seeing my sister and we had a horrible accident place and we had to rush back. You know, things happen. Life happens. And what we do with our life is critical. But being a Christian is not just keeping from sinning in terms of acts of wickedness. Being a Christian, living for God, means I'm somebody who's under the lordship of Jesus Christ. I'm his servant. The worst kind of servant is the servant who has his own agenda, is only doing his own business. The whole point of being a servant, or rather, more biblically, a slave of God, the slave of Christ, is that we're here to do his work, his will. And every day when I get up and live my life, I make my plans because I need to move forward. But I always have to be ready for God to alter those plans, to change them, to bring people my way or alter my circumstances. Because I'm not really here to do my will, I'm here to do his will. And we're on call all the time. And so God may disrupt your plans. And so you should say, Lord willing, this is what I plan to do today. Lord willing, this is how I hope to spend my money. Lord willing, this is what I have. But Lord, not my will be done, your will be done. Because anything less than that is sub-Christian. Because we're just living like the rest of the world then. Following our own marching orders, doing our own thing, living for ourselves, and not for the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords and God Almighty. God is to have authority over all of life. Do we only believe this in theory, or is it the reality of the way we live? Living a worldly life is living life without God. Living without God is the heart of sin. The scary thing is that we can believe in God and still live as though we don't. Have we included God in our plans? Do we allow him to disrupt our lives? Are we here to do his will? Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Heavenly Father, help us to do that each and every day. In Jesus' name.